for CPA Mobile.
Back.
K-4, BWA.
I'm the only one that's back, but I got the loot now, boy. I got the banana pudding. I got a big old bowl of banana pudding just sitting here looking at me.
Going to eat it?
Eat and drive, so might attract attention to myself.
People think I'd never make it home.
Tempting, but I'll wait till I get home. I got some sugar-free Cool Whip put on it, and I'll be good to go.
Now, is that banana pudding made with sugar-free sweeteners?
Everything in it is sugar-free. The pudding, sugar-free. The cookies she uses these cookies, the Fortman cookies, and they're no sugar added. And she crumbles them up instead of using vanilla wafers. You can get every now and then you can find vanilla wafers that are sugar free or no sugar added on the shelf, but it's rare. It's a rare occasion. So she just crumbles these Wortman cookies up in there and then puts in the pudding, and then she, you know, has a. Usually, you know, we're eating over at her house, she'll have a container or two of Cool Whip sitting out there, and one of them will be the sugar-free variety.
It is a banana pudding-like substance. It's not really, really banana pudding.
We could get into the discussion about banana pudding. I mean, my grandmother used to make it, and she cooked it. So it was warm banana pudding. I loved it, to be honest with you. I mean, it was really good. But now, you know, nobody takes the time to cook banana pudding. And, you know, since I'm sugar-free with everything, something like this is just like, you know, a taste of heaven. Because when you haven't tasted sugar in 15 years like I have, you know, something like this is just what the doctor ordered.
So, you know, real cane sugar won't really bother you. It's not really a big problem. It's all these fructoses and aspartames and all that kind of stuff that eventually starts bothering you. Because what was that first stuff that came out? Saccharin? Shoot, they were using that in the old frescas and stuff like that, I think. And they showed where that stuff would give you joint problems, like, you know, mimicking arthritis.
My stepmother, she used saccharin and everything she drank. And when she made tea, iced tea, she'd sweeten it with saccharin and... I just never did like the way saccharin made stuff taste. It changes the taste of everything you put it in. And I just never did like that, so I don't use it. If I have to use it, occasionally if I drink a cup of coffee out when we're eating out or something, I'll use some Splenda, but I use this sugar-free coffee mate at home, and so it sweetens the coffee and it creams it too. So so it's like a two and four one. So it tastes good to me. So that's what I use, but. Because I like cream in my coffee, too.
Yellow packs?
Roger.
Life uses. She uses the Splenda, the yellow pack stuff. And, I've tried it in unsweetened tea before. It's not too bad, but it's still not sugar.
So nothing is. I mean, when I... I mean, I've been at a restaurant, ordered unsweet tea before. Now I just drink water, but if they bring me sweet tea, I always take a sip of it before I take a big gulp of it, because sometimes I forget, bring me sweet tea, and I know immediately if it has sugar in it. You know, like I said, if you haven't ingested sugar in 15 years, you know when you're eating or drinking sugar, it's like twice as potent to me as it would be to you.
Yep. Well, bud, you better get home and get on to that nanner pudding, and you enjoy yourself this afternoon. I'm fixing to head back into the house and see what other honeydews Mama has for me. And you know what? There's already pollen falling on the hood of my truck.
You kidding me? Oh, well. There goes the sinuses. Well, change the subject. So you're serious about selling your starter for the airplane?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got a brand new battery in it.
Well, I could probably hit you up for that, you know, if you don't hit me too high with the price.
Well, we'll come to terms. All right. Did you figure out what was going on with that glow plug attachment?
Yeah, at the Hobby Connection, my problem, and he just handed me this. It's just a wire and it's got a rubber. It looks kind of like one of those right angle rubber boots that you used to see on the lawnmower spark plugs, but it's a lot smaller. You know, it's the size of that would fit on a glow plug. And then it has a looks like a ground, and then it has a on beyond that it has a place that you screw the actual igniter onto, and so that way, you know, all that is, you can situate it so it's going back, you know, toward the back of the plane, and you don't have to worry about anything getting caught in the propeller.
Good. You know what? Listen, I'm thinking that those engines will turn about 12,000 RPM. And this old boy had a glow engine over at the field today. Man, he fired that thing up, and I have never heard anything turn that kind of RPM. And I asked him, I said, that's one of those high-performance engines, isn't it? He says, yeah, I use it for high-speed passes. I said, what kind of RPM is that thing turning? He says, it's about anywhere between 22 and 26,000.
Fast as my die grinder spins that fast. One of my air tools, it turns at 25,000 RPM. That's fast. How does he measure that?
This little electric eye probe that apparently, you know, he could put the probe up there, and it uses an electric eye to measure the passes of the prop.
W4DJW.
Hall effect device or something.
I think it's a, well, I'm not sure what it is. I just won't make any comments. I'm not sure how that thing works. But I'm pretty sure it's not like on a radar, that type of thing. Oh, I'll have to ask him next time I see him over there.
W4DJW.
Hey, Dave. So tell me, what's John up there using as a RPM check device on that really, really high RPM engine.
That's a handheld tack. They've been around for years. Not my JR10 had one built into the radio. I had a Futaba that had that same thing, a handle that you just pull out the side and you'd hold it in front. You tell it how many blades the prop had, and it's just a tack. You can get them on Amazon for, like, you stick a piece of electrical tape across a disc and you spin the disc and then you just shine the tack on it and it measures the time, the quantities of times that that piece of tape comes around. They're very popular. You can get them anywhere.
Up to the RPM that John was claiming?
Some of those things go up to 60, 70, 80,000 RPM. Some of them over 120,000. Most airplanes, the racing airplanes, the really, really fast ones, they top out before they hit 30,000. But some of them can get that high. It's ridiculously high RPM.
I can't even imagine that much. Well, that's got to be a really precision device to get that kind of RPM on a conventional piston.
No, it's not hard on the tack. You know those airplanes that they, when we were up there last time, that sailplane that had a really thin wing and really small, short cord and really thin, that engine or that motor, that electric motor, it was hitting well over that that kind of RPM. Those hit that kind of RPM all the time. Some of them have a single blade prop that they can go faster with one blade than two. It's less wind drag.
Okay. So what kind of RPM is my electric turning?
Probably 16 to 20, something like that. 16K to 20. 16, 18, 20, on, depending on the one, but you're not diving or you're not doing anything like that. You're just flying normal speed. So probably between 12 and 16. 16 when you're taking off and 12 when you're just cruising around.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. Well, for something to turn 26,000 RPM, it's got to be balanced out really nice. John had that yellow and red airplane up there. I think you saw it up there. It's a glow fuel engine. And I think he said, I'm 99% sure he said he was turning 26,000 RPM.
Yeah, I don't doubt that a bit. Those redhead engines, I saw them the other day in the new airplane room that I've never even fired up. I've got several of those that we're using for racing. They'll hit that easy, but you're going to pay $600 or $700, $800 an engine instead of like $40 to $80 an engine. They cost a lot more. But like you said, they're a lot more precise. That's what's difficult is the engine that'll do that. Electric motors will do that without breaking a sweat because there's no balance problem. They don't have a big piston going up and down with a counterweight and an explosion going off in half of the engine, all right? They're just well-balanced magnets going around in circles.
Hey, are you listening, Dave? And by the way, now, so you said that they're just counting flashes of the prop plate?
Yeah. Basically, the brake and the light, there's a light beam, and they get a reflection back or they don't, and they count the number of times they get the reflection back. They need to know how many blades the prop has in order to be accurate.
All effect device is, or does, it's the same thing, except it looks for a window instead of a mark.
Wait, yeah, it's counting pulses. How about that? Well, hey, Dave, it was a beautiful morning up there. Absolutely dead calm. And, man, I greased about pretty much every landing. It was wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. That restores your confidence when the wind's not blowing and you do have control over the airplane, right? When the wind's blowing really hard and you get close to the ground, you have some control. You don't have full control. You have some control over the airplane. So on a really calm day, that's a really good confidence builder.
Well, I tried the flaps, and that thing threw the flaps down, full flaps, straight off. And, I mean, it was just, I just, I, I couldn't get that thing to really stabilize out. That's just way, way, way too much flaps for that airplane. So I have got to either figure out how to go in there and reduce the throw through the programming, or I got to figure out how, where I can get a radio with a variable, what is the word I'm looking for? You know, where I can vary the flaps just with a dial instead of a all on or all off or three position kind of thing.
Or just go into the control horn on the servo side and move it in, move it to the innermost hole, and go to the control horn on the air, on the control surface and move it to the outer hole, all the way to the outer hole. Just do a mechanical. Doing that, you give the servo much more strength, and you take a lot of the throw out. You have to recenter it at zero, right, by maybe moving it a notch on the servo or unscrewing or screwing in the clevises, something like that. But that's a real easy way to do it, and you get better mechanical advantage toward making them hold as well. That'll cut down because, like you said, they got way too much throw. That much throw might be good once you get used to it, and you can automatically put some down elevator at the same time that you put in, like, that radio that you were looking at. With it, you can program to get down elevator when flaps come on. And what that does is that kicks the tail up in the air so it doesn't let the flaps lift the wing up, and then you just get more drag. And with more drag, you just slow down, right? You got more lift, and you get slower. So it's like air brakes. And so that works pretty good, but you got to be able to do two things with one throw of the switch.
A proportional control is the word that I was looking for. And if I could just get something with true proportional control, then I could dial up as much flap as I want and be off to the races. That old 72 megahertz radio I've got has proportional control of the flaps. And I just don't want to take that radio and put it on that airplane. I just don't think it'd work out all that great. But anyhow, neither here nor there. I got to get me a radio with proportional flap control.
Or programmable. Programmable mixing is what you need. Because just pulling the flaps down by themselves, the nose is going to jump. And you're going to have to push down elevator. When we were flying competition, one of the things you wanted to do is you had to get off the ground, do your stunts, get on the ground fast as you could. So we'd power it at the runway. Right after the event, after you did your maneuver, you'd come in about a three-quarters throttle at the pointed at the runway. And then when you pull your throttle back all the way, the last click that goes from an up idle to a down idle would kick down elevator and up spoilers, because the spoilers and the ailerons are the same thing. And you kick them up, and you think that would push the nose down. But those things had such big wings and such big ailerons, it acted like a flying wing. They acted more like elevators lifting up, which pushed it. And because the aileron was behind the center of gravity, they are pushing on the aileron when they came up instead of going down like flaps go down, which increases lift. When they came up, it made the airplane pitch up as well, like you put flaps down. So you'd come in, the last click of the throttle, it would sling the ailerons, both of them, up at about a 45 to 50 degree angle. And it would put about 10 to 15 degrees down elevator in there. And the airplane would just stop, like it hit a brick wall in the air. And then you'd let off of it with that one click, and it just touched down on the ground. So you didn't come floating in. You came in under power, and then when you hit the brakes, it changed its pitch. And then when you let up off of it by coming up that one click off of idle, it touched down nice and smooth. So programmable is what you need. Digital proportional programmable.
Okay. Basically, what you're talking about doing is nulling out the nose rise with the ailerons.
Yeah. Well, and it's different. Every airplane's different. They're not all the same, right? With flaps, you're going to be bringing them down, and you're going to put down the elevator in it. With a stunt plane, you're going to be pulling ailerons up. You're going to spoil, you're going to kill the lift because you don't want any more lift. You're going really fast. You got way too much lift. You want to kill all the lift really fast. you want to change the pitch so the nose is high so you don't hit on your nose, hit on your prop, because they're tricycle landing gear. So you want the nose to come in high, but not so high that you start that it changes the angle of attack on the wing and makes it start climbing up in the air again. You don't want that. That's too much. And you want it all to happen with moving off of the last click on the throttle to the first click on the throttle. All that happens with that one movement, that one click on the throttle. Spoilers go up, elevator goes down, and throttle, you come off your throttle, right? By that one click. And that's all you have to do, right? But you'll get there. It's just letting you know, mixing nowadays is much more important than it used to be in the past. W4DJW.
Dave, you been listening to all that? Banana pudding.
Sounds like he's eating banana pudding.
Eating banana pudding, too, instead of listening to two geezers like us. But, you know, it was a nice day out there today, Dave. It was nice. And not that the sun was shining and all that good stuff, but I'm going to tell you, the air was just, it wasn't choppy, it was dead calm, it was nice.
I was looking out the window and I told, and the fir tree across the street wasn't moving a twig. The leaves that have been dead from last year that are just holding on, you know, the very few that are left that are all crinkled up and brown that were last year's leaves that didn't fall. Normally, the slightest wind, those things are just moving around like wind chimes, right? They weren't moving at all. Nothing. I mean, it was dead, nothing. And I was telling Amy about that, and she said, I thought you said there was a storm coming. I said, there is. This is the calm before the storm. And evidently, that's what it was, because by 3 o'clock, when I looked out there, everything's moving around again.
When I got up this morning at about 7:45, man, I looked out and I said, the sun's out. Wait a minute, those trees are not moving. I went and looked at my little weather station. It said wind zero. I said, oh, no, I got to go check this out. And I stepped outside. I put my clothes on, got down into the building, got both of my lawn mowers all serviced up for the season. While the battery's charged, and man, by 11 o'clock, I was headed for the field, and it was so nice.
Well, that's good. Once you get and are you liking that 2600 milliamp hour battery pack, the little extra weight and a little extra punch so that it doesn't set the alarm off?
Not, because now I got to find me an airplane that'll fly just fine with that 2200.
Well, there's all kinds of things you can do with batteries, spare batteries. You won't, I mean, eventually you'll find something else to do with it. You can never have enough portable electricity, and they're good for lots of things. Sometimes I use those for coolers if I'm running like a hot CPU and I don't have any electricity nearby. I put a little fan on it and set it there. A LiPo battery will run on one of those little fans for hours. So there's all kinds of things you can use those for. But once you get comfortable with that, those big balloon tires and that high lift and that really easy to fly airplane, you'll be taking it out in your front yard and tossing it on the driveway, and you'll be in the air in 3 feet.
Has crossed my mind, sir. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons I got the equipment serviced up for the season. I'm actually thinking about trying to start a nice finish cut there along one strip in my front yard. I actually think I could get that mall and fly in and out of there without any problem.
I'm trying to remember from being over there, it seems like to me the area behind the tower, if you have the house to your back and the tower is in front of you, if you just go continue straight on past the tower, there was a long, straight, flat stretch right back there before you know, well before you get to the lake. Is that, and it was level. It was even. And it was high. It was elevated, so you're not, like, going to run into something because you're not looking. Is all that your land, too?
Looking at the front of my house, okay, and you see my tower standing out behind the house, on that is the adjacent property. Well, I'm sure they wouldn't care if I flew over their property, but I think I probably got enough space right there in the front to where I could fly up from my man cave up to the house and back on that type of circuit without too much trouble at all.
Yeah, I was just trying to keep glass to your back. Right? If you think of where, when you're flying, where the flight line is, the house and all the glass and the cars and the windshield and everything would be at your back, and you don't usually fly behind you. So I was just thinking, and out beyond that, I mean, if you go out a ways, out beyond that's the lake. So if it went down, you're not going to damage anything if you're flying out over in that area. So I was just thinking that might be a good place to go. I got my APRS, I got my dad's old, when we were in high school, my dad had a radio that he had in his car, and I found that the other day. Came across it. The display didn't work. I think I might have told you about it. Display was out. The finals are gone, and I ordered some new finals off of eBay. They're supposed to be here next Tuesday. Anyway, I got the display working again, and I put it on a signal link. So it's doing digital radio now, and it's just now picked up an airplane going over. Well, it's going over Spartanburg, but still going over us. N4AWL-10, an airplane's flying over. It's just picked up. That's pretty cool. I don't know if you do APRS or if you thought about doing APRS, but that's pretty cool. There's people flying around us on amateur radio, like cars driving down the road with APRS beacons running out of them. N4AWL-10.
So you could actually talk to the aircraft.
Yeah, a lot of time in the beacon, they'll tell what the other side of the radio is listening to. And you just switch to that frequency, key it up, and throw your call sign out. Or throw their call sign out and your call sign. And they're listening to the radio. If they don't have the volume turned down, they'll come back to you.
Well, yeah, I talked to somebody the other day that had actually picked up airliners on HF. And I thought that was pretty cool, too.
I don't know how they do that. Okay, so he's called Spartanburg Airport, SPA Airport, iGate Digi. And he's getting I just pulled up the parameters on him. He must fly around here a lot. Right? Normally when you see an airplane going overhead and APRS, they're just cutting through, right? And that doesn't take them long, right? 30 minutes from the time you first see them till you don't see them anymore. But his beacon comment is SPA Airport iGate Digi. That's pretty cool.
About that. Hey, you know, it's sort of, guess what? I'm sitting in the truck and I'm fixing to go in the house and we just got our first raindrops. It's starting to rain. It's here. From what I understand, we're going to have a rough afternoon. But neither here nor there. I should really get this out of my head, but man, I tell you what, I got to daydreaming the other day, and there is a Piper Tri-Pacer down at Greenville downtown, and I may just have to go and check that little sweetheart out. You know, they cruise faster than a 172.
Can they go as fast as a Burt Rutan, Quickie Canard? I think those things will cruise at 190, and it's single engine.
Okay. No, a 172 is going to cruise out at about 120. This Piper Tri-Pacer is going to cruise out at about 135, depending on which engine is in it. It'll top out at about 140, 145 cruise speed. And, you know, and they naturally have a greater speed than that if you wind them up. But, you know, that would just be a fun little airplane, and it's basically a Piper Cub with tricycle gear.
W4DJW. Well, take off. Go look at it. Let us know what it looks like. I lost a lot of interest in full scale because I don't want to really go anywhere. I'd rather keep my feet on the ground and my head in the sky.
If you do your maintenance and your due diligence and do it right, you know, it's safe. And I tell you what, that would really be fun. And you could fly into just about anywhere. Well, listen, I'm going to jump out of here, and I'm going to go get the last two hairs I've got on top of my head wet by going into the house, bud. You go have a good afternoon. Oh, did you get your wood done?
No, I didn't do that. I was thinking by the time I got everything set up, it'd start raining, and it'd take me so long to get it back in, it'd be damaged, so I wouldn't do that. So I didn't go flying, and I didn't get the woodwork done either. So I did get the apers beacon up and running, though. So one thing accomplished. Anyway, I'll let you go. Take care. I'm glad you had a good time flying. Glad you had some nice, calm weather to fly in for the first time. Anyway, good talking to you. KN4VWA, W4DJW.
It's a nice, restful afternoon. As a matter of fact, see if you can't get an eyelid inspection in there this afternoon. That's what I'm going to do. Later. KN4VWA, clear.
Yeah, 4-9. Let's see. We might have a signal this time, maybe.
You got a little bit of signal there, Al. Not a lot, but you've got a little bit. I don't know if it'll hold. Depends on how you got a good charge on your battery.
There's those little couplers, you know, for the antenna, for the SMA connectors. I got the wrong one. I think we hooked to the power. I think it'll work for now.
Well, it works for a little bit, but when you get long-winded, it starts going away. That's kind of like the finals in my dad's radio that I'm working on. When you first key it up, I got it on a watt meter. When you first key it up, it'll on full power, right, which is supposed to be 50 watts, you'll get 4 watts out of it. But by the time you get the fifth word out of your mouth, it's down to 2 watts. By the time you get the seventh word out of your mouth, you're down to a watt. If you make it to 10 words, you're down to 3/4 of up to a half a watt.
It's really getting hot. I mean, it's smoking the file out of it, but it's doing.
Well, Al, you shouldn't be using it. If that SMA connector doesn't have a center pin in it, then you're transmitting, I mean, basically, you've got a really, really high reflected wave. You know, a lot of SMA connectors, there's different kinds. They have, some of them have center pins and some of them don't. If that one doesn't have a center pin and the other one that plugged into it doesn't have a center pin, I've had that issue happen plenty of times before, and you're just reflecting all of that energy right back into your radio. When are you going to get that other radio fixed? The Kenwood.
First thing I'm going to do tomorrow is get that. I'm going to get that fire.
Okay, that radio's done now. It's not keeping up. I mean, it's not keeping the repeater up. I'm getting bits and pieces of words, and it's not holding the repeater. But I meant to say ICOM, not Kenwood. Your 706 ICOM. I think that's the one that you're talking about getting a new diode put into it. Anyway, you don't have to talk back to me because you're cooking that radio, Al. Take care. Be safe. Don't break the last bit of radio you got. KI4MLN, W4DJW clear.